coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to a live show. Man, we had a serious series of on location interviews. It was epic. It was awesome. We had a great run of stuff. Everything from, geez, it started with Texas UFO Con. Then right after that came, Shakespeare authorship controversy with the Shakespeare Author Oxford Fellowship. Then right after that was the International Remote Viewing Association 25th anniversary cruise. Then right after that was Texas Bigfoot Conference. Like, it's just been amazing. And tonight, our second guest is also live on location from the amazing Symposium of the Strange in San Antonio. That is a monthly series that Curious Events, my company, has been putting on with Ryan Edwards and Bayer County Bigfoot. It is a fantastic series, great speakers. You know, it's an intimate evening with the speaker on a topic. Last month, we were talking with Karen Wilkinson about her book, Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest, about her experience of being abducted by aliens, having a fetus implanted in her, and then having said fetus taken from her, and what that experience was like for her. So we'll be getting into that in an on-location Q&A. We kind of turned the Q&As there into a second part of the episode, so it's neat. It gives the audience a chance to participate, ask questions, and gives us a chance to look at things in a different light. So stay tuned for that in the second part. In our first part tonight, we are doing a dedication to our good friend and guest, Dr. Robert Duncan. Many of you in the targeted individual community have reached out to me. I know y'all have reached out to Dr. John Hall as well, asking about him. He unfortunately did confirmedly pass away a couple of months ago. And shortly on the heels of that, our good friend Ron Patton from MKZ Zine Cast, as well as Clyde Lewis, reached out to us from Ground Zero and was like, Alana Friedman would like to do an in memoriam episode with you and Dr. John Hall. And I thought that that was an amazing idea. Dr. Duncan came to be a good friend of the show, somebody that we texted outside of the program, chatted with things about, just shared news stories with, things like that. And it was probably about a year ago, episode 73, that we did our final episode with the good doctor. So we will be playing a few clips from that tonight, sharing his sage advice to the targeted community. I would like to welcome, firstly, to our show, Alana Friedman. She is the author of Geoengineered Transhumanism, as well as other books on the topics of transhumanism, on the topics of global geoengineering and other technologies. Welcome to the show, Alana.
Oh, thank you. It's Freeland, not Friedman.
I'm sorry, Freeland.
You just reminded me of when I used to play duplicate bridge, and I would go to a table and people would change my name. I don't know why.
I've literally got it written down on a post-it note in front of my face. I am so sorry for that, Alana.
No, it's okay. Thank you for having me. And, Dr. Duncan was, truthfully, is this a good time to tell my
brush with him? Share your story of how you came to meet Dr. Duncan.
Yeah, well, the truth is I never met him in the flesh, but I definitely was in touch with him through email. And here's the weird thing that happened. I read his Matrix Undeciphered, which I found on the internet for free.
Yep.
And it was, I have this obsession, because I'm sort of obsessive, compulsive, that if something is not edited well, I generally print it out and I just start editing as I'm reading. And I don't know what my scene is with that, but that's what I did with his Matrix Deciphered.
Yeah.
So I'm editing away and learning from him and realizing that I have not paid enough attention to the satellite question of geoengineering. And so he sent me on the right trail for that regarding the mind control going on. I knew things about geoengineering, such as that there is a constant broadcast over the last 20 years of 3 hertz coming from HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska.
Yeah.
And that frequency provides the background for a variety of frequencies that are then broadcast around the planet for different purposes. So, you know, he really corrected me without knowing he was correcting me. And when I finished the editing of it and printed out a nice brand new copy and it was all nice on the internet, I found someone who had his email. And I emailed him and apologized for having had the temerity to edit his work, but I thought he might want to take a look at it, you know, if he wanted to use it, go ahead. If not, that's fine, but I wanted to admit that I'd done it. So I sent it off, and he wrote me back and thanked me. And said that he was really appreciative that I had done that. And that's really the extent of my contact with Robert Duncan. And when he showed up dead, I think it was September 5th,
yeah,
and he had been so brutally targeted, I had already met his close friend, Dr. Len Baer, an MD, at a microscopy group in Australia that I'm allowed to attend in order to look at what they're finding in live blood analysis and other substances, because I'm writing a book on synthetic biology for Inner Traditions. And Len was his really close friend, and Len was doing microscope work there as well. So that's really the extent of it. I tend to think that is his finest book, but then I've been through it in detail, having edited it, I have my own copy. I don't know if the one on the net is from my edited version or another version or whatever, but it turns out, as Len Baer corrected me, that Robert had not wanted to have it free on the internet, but somehow it ended up there that way.
It did, and I remember I'm actively going through my website right now because he had actively given me permission to put it on my website. And I was honored. And I was like, well, you know, like, I know it ended up on the internet. And he was like, no. He's like, let me. And I believe he sent me the actual edited copy. Because he was like, I have one that's better than what's out there. And gave me permission to post that on my website in the knowledge vault. And it's resided there since the days of, as Dr. John Hall told you before the show off air, of Dudes and Beer. Like that was when I first had Robert Duncan on, was Dudes and Beer many, many years ago. Like he would sit and have a drink with us on air, talk about things. It was great. And like I said, you know, talking casually about very deep, thick thick topic, Solana, because these things are rough. They are not easy to talk about when you start getting into gang stalking, when you start getting into some of the symptomology that TIs and even Robert Duncan himself suffered, which I think this is a fantastic opportunity to introduce once again to the show, Dr. John Hall, and hear his story of how he met Dr. Duncan, because it really kind of speaks to his targeted nature. So welcome back to the show, Dr. John Hall. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Chris. Good. And glad to be here memorializing Robert Duncan. He was a good friend of mine. And interesting story. We had talked about it before. The way we actually met was when I first wrote my first book, which was really just a story about a girl that I knew that was being targeted, and written pretty much in a story format, a new breed. And talking about a new breed of surveillance and a new breed of targeting is when this girl came to me and said, I'm hearing voices and I've got people following me. I from my experience, I kind of already knew what it was. Sure enough, you know, she was a targeted individual and was being pretty well controlled actually as well. So my first book was written about her story. And the first show I did based on that book was Coast to Coast AM, and was inundated with emails after, you know, we broached the topic of, you know, at that time we weren't referring to it as targeted individual, but as just, you know, a microwave or directed energy based surveillance. And I had two of the contacts that were made to me. Was one was an anesthesiologist in Kansas City who was fighting the same thing and doing research on the same thing, and had worked for the government as well on some of the topics. And so him and I kind of started to collaborate. And then I got an email from Robert Duncan saying, you know, well, not, I'm contacting you because I'm a victim, but I've also worked on some of the technology that, you know, I think we're dealing with. And, you know, which I had, you know, we immediately, you know, kind of collaborated, and it was me and him. I can't mention this other physician by name because he's kind of bailed out of the fight. Yeah. For his own protection. So I'm not going to mention him, but it was kind of interesting. He said, well, you know, I, you know, did some work for the CIA on some of the, you know, a little bit of the technology, or my part of the research in the technology, which was physics based.
Yeah.
You know, all of my research had been more on biologic systems and the medical aspect, you know, of it. So we decided to kind of collaborate, and, he read the book and he said, well, I'm thinking about coming out with my own book based on the physics part of it, which was Soul Catcher. Mm-hmm. And then that came out. Another interesting story is not long after that, Jesse Ventura kind of bit on, doing a show about, you know, targeting. And, he called me and said, do you have any other professionals you can kind of get roped into this? And, so, you know, I pulled him in and Fred Bell and, you know, and of course, you know, not realizing that they were going to kind of blame it all on Robert's research with the CIA on him, which kind of was destroyed him for a little bit in the targeted individual community, because the show kind of made him look like he was complicit with the CIA in development.
Yeah.
You know, and, which he wasn't. I mean, and just for your listeners, the way any of that research works in the government, there's nobody that has the whole puzzle. The way it works is they'll have one group working on one very minute aspect, another group working on another minute aspect.
That's right.
100 other groups working on 100 other minute aspects. And nobody working on the minutia knows what the complete puzzle is going to look like when it's done.
That's right.
We figured it out because once the victims started coming forward, we're like, oh, that's what they were doing with it.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they needed to know how you could actually receive an EEG without putting electrodes on the scalp and, you know, things like that for heterodyning. So,
well, and, you know, that actually is a, you could not, it, I, it's almost like we planned this, Doc. That is literally my first clip, is him talking about how he actively helped create some of this technology, and not in any kind of nefarious way, just doing his job in the way that he would typically do it. So let's hear this from Dr. Duncan's own mouth here. These are clips, y'all, from Curious Realm episode 73, which was the last episode that we actively recorded with Dr. Duncan. So here is that clip.
Weapons, which I understand they might come to that conclusion of what we call resonance frequent resonance weapons, or cavitation in the brain caused the brain damage, and etc. But what really bothers me is, I've worked on a lot of these weapon systems, and this is all known. The DARPA scientists like myself cannot talk about it because we're under, a non-disclosure agreement and an oath, but you can find it in all the CIA libraries and military libraries, that this is well known of what we are capable of and what we can do. We are just trying to keep it out of the eye of the public and of the, third world countries to catch up. Well, so, yeah, it's very disheartening to hear it and know the truth, but to watch how people are being programmed, to question.
And there is a prime example of what he's talking about, the way that people go about doing their regular everyday work within a program, and things get usurped and taken and made part of something else for nefarious means that they had no idea about. It was years later that he found out that his work was being used for those purposes. And he left pretty quickly after ringing the bells and becoming a whistleblower in that right.
Yeah, and he in the Matrix deciphered, he says it's short and sweet that they had him work on those weapons, and then when he was done with his part, they turned them on him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. That was one of the things that we talked about regularly, was the idea of targeting and why targeting. And it's a perfect time to bring up that question. Dr. Hall, from what we know right now, why are people targeted? Is there any kind of pattern? Is there any kind of, distinct personality that makes somebody more or less targetable by these technologies?
You know what? From all the studies that we did early on this, it seemed pretty random. Now, you're going to have the odd whistleblowers, I'm pretty sure that, my fiance was targeted because of me. Robert, of course, was targeted for also being a whistleblower. So it's, there are some people, like I've met with former agents of the National Geospatial Agency and former CIA people, and of course now we've got, Havana Syndrome government employees that are being victimized. And it is every bit the same technology that they're being victimized with. Most of them have gag orders on them, but quite a few of them have gotten through to me indirectly through friends. And they're not hearing crickets, they're hearing voices too. So, and they're being attacked, and they're having, all the same traumatic brain injury and white tract matter issues that anybody else is having that's victimized by this technology. But yeah, if you look at a whole at the targeted individual community, I think it pretty much represents a random sample. And the way it's done, if you're not being targeted directly by the government, then you're probably being targeted by a private investigative group that has someone that is a former government employee. And that was probably the biggest asset that I had with what was happening here in San Antonio, is I did identify who was doing it. And it was a PI who was former FBI. His son was former DOD, former lieutenant colonel. and they were doing the stalking, and they were doing the electronic surveillance and the electronic targeting attack as well. So, and these were people that were kind of known to me. So, I mean, it's, you know, that's one good thing, because, I mean, once I wrote my first book and I started talking to some targeted individuals, including, you know, Robert, you know, one of the few that had also come to the conclusion that, you know, this is, it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody in your neighborhood doing it. It can be someplace on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
Doing it to you, which is certainly the case. Now, the only good thing that kind of happened to me identifying them, because to get anybody put in jail, you've got to be able to prove it. And this is a hard crime to prove. But I, by at least kind of shedding some light on the group here, I think I did limit their ability to target people in our area, you know, because I mean, immediately after that book came out, I had quite a few local people going, well, you know who it is? It's this group. These are the people following us. And you know what? Everybody that called me with that complaint were correct.
Wow.
On who it was.
Wow.
So,
but John, is that pretty much how you finally figured out who it was by what you were being told by people?
Well, I mean, I caught them. I mean, they were breaking into my house, into the girl's house that I wrote about. And, I mean, and I live so far out in the country that when I would leave her place at 2 a.m. on a weeknight, like Wednesday night, and have 3 cars follow me to my driveway, you know, in the middle of a ranch, you know, it was, you know, and they all came back to the same PI group. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of the targeted individuals, I think that it's the CIA directly or the NSA directly doing it, but it's too widespread for one group to do it that way. And after getting kind of busted during MK Ultra, and Robert agreed with me on this too, that they were a little smarter this time around, because it's a continuation of MK Ultra anyway you cut it. And since they got busted by the financial records being found, what they did this time is just farmed it out to a bunch of private companies and stuff that could do it.
Wow. Wow.
Well, that seems to be the way it is going, because of the sophistication of the machinery needed in order to do the targeting. Like I've come across several sources recently that it's really Homeland Security now that seems to be the warehouse where you get the machines that you need, the directed energy weapons, and then you go out from there. And I've been thinking that makes sense to me. They could approve it, say it's, you know, maybe it's a matter of somebody who's mad at somebody in a community and has some contacts in order to get hold of one of those devices, and then do some dirt to the people that he's targeting. And then you take the machine back and, you know, you've got these contacts. Anyway, that's sort of how I think of it. But sometimes when I did a book tour, I got hit, but it was simply to make me weak, would be what I'd say. Nobody wanted to kill me. It was more that Bobby Kennedy was going to show up for one of my talks in the L.A. area, and he didn't make it that night. But around that one talk, I was hit for 5 other talks that I was scheduled to make around there about geoengineering. And what they did is they made it so I couldn't keep any food down. I would projectile vomit everything up that I took in. So I ended up sleeping a lot in order to have the energy to be able to talk. And then once that night, that one talk that they had been weakening me for turned out to be he didn't show up, then I think it ended. The electronics of it ended. But I was so weak by then that I eventually had to cancel 2 talks. So that was one of, I've been hit twice big time, and that was one of them. And it seems like it's tailored to the person. Now, in my case, maybe they didn't want me to talk about geoengineering. It certainly is not what they're telling the public it is. It's a massive weapon system on multiple levels. And, you know, takes four books to tell that story. But I tend to think I just heard from a family, the woman is dead, and what made her leave her house with no shoes on in the cold of December, no coat, leaving her purse behind, her cell phone behind? What made her go down to a river and either drown herself or be drowned there by others? You know, that kind of a certain kind of targeting that seems to be tailored to specific people with specific symbols in it. And I have noticed that, too. Have you noticed that, John?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They do enough research on you and what I call data mining or brain mining to find out what your fears, your loves, who your family is. Before you ever hear a voice one or get attacked, they already know who you're going to turn to for support. Yeah. And that way that's kind of knocked out, because, you know, most of the time for a targeted individual, their family is their worst enemy. Yeah. And because they tend to blame their family. It's designed that way, which kind of brings me back to another one. Robert and I have both agreed on this. And it's funny because I think the quote that you, that at least you sent me, Chris, I think he got that from me, you know, when we were talking and I said, you know what, these people are, they're being told lies by other voices in order for them to attack a family member or to attack a stranger that has nothing to do with it, because that way they land in prison and they just get victimized for the rest of their days in one place. And I don't know if you're putting it up or not, but that was a quote from him directly. Yeah.
And I was actively getting ready to play a quote from him talking about how consciousness itself can be hijacked. When we come back from that quote, I'd like to get into some of the modern technologies being used for that. As we let you go last time, Doctor, we were getting into some of that. And I know, Alana, you have some work related to that. So when we come back from this quick quote, let's chat about some of the technologies that allow for this basically mass control of consciousness. It's pretty fascinating. Here is the quote from Dr. Duncan himself.
Absolutely. This is the most important breakthrough and conversations humans should be having right now. Their very soul, if you will, consciousness, can be altered and can be manipulated and passwords stolen through dream interrogation techniques and et cetera, et cetera. And nothing, just silent crickets.
That right there, I was just showing on screen the article from MIT about how MIT was able to actively communicate with dreamers and how dreamers were actively able to answer questions while in the dream state, things like that. One of the things that I've been talking about regularly on the show since our conversation last time, Doctor, is the National Institute of Health study that was released during the COVID pandemic and right on the heels of that, where they're talking about literally the damage done to the hippocampus, the bruising of the hippocampus done by negative news cycles. And just the idea of, psychologically, when you start looking at things like MK Ultra, when you start looking at other beginnings of mind control, the first part is breaking somebody, you know, whether it's the extreme of waterboarding or whether it's the beginning of gaslighting, you know, but to have had that 2 years almost of lockdown with nothing but negative news cycle shoved in your face digitally, if you were watching on an analog TV out in the woods, didn't matter. There was nothing happy about the news for 2 years. And that in and of itself sets up for an amazing realm of control. It sets up for an amazing realm of didactic control of the way that brains think, and of specifically the way that a damaged brain thinks. Because once again, that negative news cycle begins that process by bruising your hippocampus, that part that separates your forward-thinking brain from the amygdala, the fight or flight response. You know.
Well, and that's what we had kind of gotten into on our a little bit on the last show. Yeah. And they figured out that the hippocampus is exactly where they want to target, because it's essentially your Dewey Decimal System for the rest of the brain functions. You know, and it's what gives you historical context and your ability to interpret your own personal history and your personal memories with how you need to react for future. So, I mean, it can kind of erase your past memories, and it can kind of create, you know, artificial future memories too. And what they found out is that the SARS virus, whether you're actually printing it out because you had the mRNA virus on your own through your own genetics, or you've been infected with the virus, you know, holistically, I guess, or through natural, you know, catching it, that it passes through the brain-blood barrier and actually attacks the hippocampus. And I personally think that the virus was designed specifically to do that, and certainly the vaccine was designed to do that, the spike protein.
And I've got that up from Science Direct right now, talking about hippocampus alterations from SARS-CoV-19, it's pretty fascinating when you start getting into that, and when you start marrying it with other things, like Alana was talking about earlier, the idea of the 3 hertz being out there. I do a lot of binaural beat therapy music, a lot of frequency therapy music, things like that. But when you start looking at ranges below 7.8 hertz, when you start looking at things that are quite literally within your theta realm, stuff like that, yes, you would have to have an antenna that is miles long. In order to generate that kind of frequency with any kind of transmissible intensity. But at the same time, so many things that we have as far as passive electronics, smart dust, things like that can be activated by these lower end ELF.
Now you're getting into my territory.
Exactly. God, you were right there, Alana.
Well, isn't 0 to 3 hertz, isn't that the theta wave?
Yes.
Yeah. So what that is sleep.
Yep.
As I recall. And that's how I interpret that 3 hertz pulse that HARP is putting out, which goes into the atmosphere and is resonating around the globe, is a sleep one. You know, it's like that. There was some movie, was it 1984, in which this broadcast is coming out saying, sleep, sleep, sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I think of it. But the really scary part is this. Definitely now we know that nanotechnology, there was a huge nanotechnology revolution that happened probably in the 70s or a little after that, maybe the 80s. A lot happened in the 70s, boy, I'll tell you. So the nanotech is really very favored by the military and intelligence apparatus because it's cheap to make a nano, which is 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter in measurement. They can make a nanometer, and they can use then the say 1 to 100 nanos laid in a row. And what those are is they're made of atoms. They're actually an atomic level technology, and that's, you know, where have we heard that word before. Well, that was the Manhattan Project when they were able to make these huge bombs. This is very different. This is a capability to build things with these nanos. But the problem with the nanos is that, one, they are not natural. They are not, you can't kill them.
Yeah.
And they are so tiny that you can't perceive them unless they're operating in a, what I call a phalanx. I saw a wonderful video during the California fires, particularly the Paradise, California fire, in which a drone is filming what is going on with the building of these fires, and then the how the phalanx of what looks to be embers, because they're like ignited, they're like burning, and they're going along very much like a Roman phalanx with that sort of shape, that V shape. Wow. And they're going along, and it looks like, wow, is the wind blowing those? How are those embers going? Well, it turns out they're not embers at all. There was no wind that day of the Paradise fires. And these things are climbing up one wall, more of their numbers, millions of numbers, maybe billions, going down the road to skipping the next house to not burn that one, and going to the next house and crawling up that wall and starting a fire there. And what they were nano, that was nanotech, and it was being run remotely in order to start these fires. And meanwhile, on the narrative going on during this was a guy named Jamie Lee, who is no longer with us. I miss him. And he's talking with a nanomaterials PhD retired who insists on remaining anonymous. And he's talking their way through this and explaining how the nanotechnology is basically two-way communication. It never operates alone. There is no such thing as a nano doing one thing. They all operate as a group mind, as a hive mind, and they are directed in that way. Okay, so now that's them being used very physically on actual buildings being ignited. Now imagine that coming from the chemical trails above us are billions, millions, trillions of these things, all on a nanoscale, all falling down, the ones that don't end up circling the planet around the equator, which they do, they are building a metallic ring around the planet, much like Saturn, but the rest are falling down, and we're breathing these in. This is our atmosphere. It's the only atmosphere we have that we all have to breathe from it. So goes in our lungs, goes in our blood. Because of the size, the nano is easily crossing the blood-brain barrier. So this is a new thing that I really want targeted people to understand, that it isn't just from the outside and you're having something happen to you just from the 5G or 6G system that is using very tiny waves in order to get into your brain. It's also that you're loaded. We're all loaded, all of us. There's nobody who has escaped this with these nanobots. And these can be controlled remotely, either from satellite, no problem, doesn't matter how many hundreds of miles it's up, but from triangulating here on Earth, yes. And so the nano problem to me is the thing that we need to really concentrate on now and learn as much as we can about this technology, because it's also known as a biophage. And what that means is it eats life. It eats life. It destroys life. So that's number one on my mind, I'd say, right next to electromagnetics.
Well, yeah. And, especially when you start talking about, once again, that hive mind, the idea of like, oh, well, it's a small nanobot. No, yes, but it's a small nanobot. It's kind of like looking at an ant. somewhere there's a colony of those things, you know, that that react in a totally different way than the individual ant does, you know, and once you get a colonization of nanobots inside of you, let's say, now instead of a tiny antenna, you have an antenna array. You know, and like I said, when you're, and by the way, the 1 to 3 hertz is delta. I just had a chart up on screen a second ago.
Okay.
I want to make sure we get our science right now.
Right.
But when you're talking about, because that's what I've tried to explain to people, you know, is that in order to hit a brainwave of that size, in order to transmit something of that wavelength, just as like a CB operator, you would need an antenna of almost double the wavelength, you know, so it, like you'd be looking at like a 6 mile long antenna almost. But when you're looking at harps like or arrays like HARP, when you're looking at, once again, a receiving array like a whole bunch of nanobots put together, you could easily assemble something that long without it ever taking up any amount of space inside of your body.
Well, I think that's our condition now, is these nano antennae are everywhere. And that includes our hair. That includes the hair on our arms. It's a constant... it's a much larger picture of how we need to think of the electromagnetic nature of the assault going on through chemicals and through nanotech. Yeah,
absolutely. And, you know, when you start looking at especially things like resonant field technology, stuff like that, things like voice to skull technology, things like being able to implant a voice in somebody remotely. The technology like that would be a prime candidate for that, which leads us into a fantastic clip from Dr. Duncan talking about this kind of technology and how it is used on so many shooters like Aaron Alexis, the Navy Yard shooter. Here is a quick clip about that. Whalen questioned Chapman's own recollection of the night's events. Quote, he could not coherently understand why he felt compelled to shoot John Lennon. Chapman did not remember pulling the hammer or aiming, said Whalen. All he could remember was a voice in his head saying, do it. Do it.
There you go. Yeah, that's the technology. And voice of God weapons, controlling people's emotions and thoughts that we've been working on for a long time. It's the ultimate political and war weapon. What purposes would it serve to kill, like, John Lennon, or try to shoot President Reagan, or assassinate JFK? Or would, this is called social engineering, and it's how to make people react. So a lot of the shooters you hear about on television... Mm-hmm. That's a lot of them hear voices. Well, let's lock up crazy people, whatever the reaction is, or take away guns. And so it could be as a mechanism of disarming America so we can't overthrow a tyrannous government. And I'm just throwing that out there.
And you know, that is something that, once again, you have to consider, because you don't necessarily need everybody that you target to, you only need one, you know, and if you're targeting a good 50 to 100 people with that same message, with the same ideologies, things like that, to get one out of 50 or something like that would not be that incredibly hard, I don't think. And when you're talking about, once again, the marriage of these technologies together, Things like that constant negative news cycle, things like the nano smart dust, things like what you're talking about, Dr. John Hall, with other remote control possibilities. There's a whole panoply of things out there that you can do to literally steer society. Simply by putting people into a panicked state. You don't even have to get them to pick up a gun anymore.
Well, and when he mentioned the voices thing and how the voices can control some people in themselves, and we had at length discussions about that, Robert and I, and that's, you know, a little story. I think you already know this story, but you know, he had called me and he said, we need to start going out and doing these shows and telling people not to listen to these voices and do what they're saying to try to prevent some of the violence that, you know, that we saw from people who claim they were, you know, listening to the voices and the voices told them to do this or told them that they would stop being attacked if they, you know, performed a, you know, a violent act. And what kind of precipitated that is after Robert and I were both kind of known in the community and I guess in society in general for our activism, we actually started having target individuals start complaining that we were the voices they were hearing.
Yeah.
So they were hearing the voice of Robert Duncan harass them, and they were hearing the voice of Dr. John Hall harass them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's plenty of sampling that can be done with both of us. You know, we've done a lot of interviews.
I mean, even the recent targeting of you and your work by other doctors writing a study about the Hall effect. And the idea that, you know, these experiences of TIs and things like that are tied to the same thing as people having poltergeist experiences and mass hallucinations and hauntings, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, what? Like, you could not get a more public form of targeting than that. Which I still need to contact those doctors to have them on the show with you.
A group of psychologists from another country, actually based on my books, came up with the Hall effect as a psychological diagnosis. I don't know if to be mad or be honored.
I know,
but,
right?
You know, they used pictures of my book and my likeness, in doing it, but never contacted me once.
Yeah, yeah. Any press is good press.
But John, what is the Hall effect? What did they say it was?
Basically, the phenomenology. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, a form of haunting, essentially, is kind of what they said. Yeah. I mean, that it was a combination of psychological and paranormal.
Yeah.
So, which was probably some research thrown out there and paid for by the CIA. Because the CIA and the NSA, their biggest fear is that somebody's going to believe all this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Wow. When did that happen? How long ago was it?
About 2 years ago now.
Yeah. Maybe a little longer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we did a whole episode on it.
Well, that was after the New York Times actually did an article and basically said that I was the Pied Piper of the mentally ill for trying to reach out and help people that were combating targeting. And then not 2 years later, when Havana Syndrome hit, then they said, it's Havana Syndrome is obviously microwave weapons. So,
well, after it was crickets and then the poison to kill the crickets and other things like that. And, you know, that before we stray much further, I'd actually like to use this moment to play the clip from Dr. Duncan about the voices and what to do if you hear the voices. So this was his last advice to targeted individuals on this show right here.
Our targeted individuals that are listening to this broadcast, do not believe the voices of God, so to speak. That's the weapon classification in your head. It is not those people. We use voice morphing, and which is now broadly accessible technology, along with deep fakes, to trick the target into assassinating or harming the wrong person. And they need to know that. Do not, you can't believe your senses anymore. They've been overthrown.
And that is a prime example of the sage advice that he would give on shows about these situations and how to handle it if it comes up in your life. You know, it was always great to hear the care that he had with that.
Well, and if you pop up there, there's a picture of him and I when we were really young, and we were we actually did a conference together in Las Vegas, and that was one of the things that we kind of tried to push home there, was that, you know, that this technology, you know, kind of overthrows the faculties of a neurologic system where you really can't trust what your eyes see or what your ears hear. And that we,
and it does not take much. One of the frequencies I talk about regularly on shows, whenever I guest on shows talking about my frequency therapy music and even using frequencies, of other things in my avant-garde music, is 19 Hertz. 19 Hertz is one hertz below the range of human hearing. Some very good audio engineers like myself can hear it. But it's one of those that it's also the frequency at which the water in your eye begins to vibrate. It's the frequency at which you feel another presence in the room with you. It's the frequency at which we begin to have visual hallucinations, you know, and that is just one hertz below the range of human hearing, of 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. You know, so it's not like you have to get all the way down to 3 hertz to quote psychically drive somebody, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've taken to say, when people say to me, I have thoughts that just don't seem like me.
Yeah.
Is that possible? And I'm saying to them, oh, yes, that's entirely possible. So really think about it. Is this my thought, or is this just coming through me? Yeah. And I just wonder how far it extends. There's a woman living in my apartment complex who's obviously having some sort of mental breakdown, it appears. And I'm actually happy that she's not in a psych ward where they dose her with a lot of drugs, that she's kind of facing it herself. But sometimes her thought forms that she has, that I just hear about through hearsay from a third party, sound like some thinking that I'm doing. And it definitely has me concerned, because I think of all the twinning going on between your, what they call twinning, between your thoughts and your consciousness and this virtual consciousness of you that is being purportedly built to be like your consciousness, so that they can then virtually send thoughts. This is what I think it's going to be. Virtually send thoughts to your human body consciousness, and you won't know that it came from a computer thousands of miles away, and somebody on some monitor or something. I wonder about that. How much twinning they're doing between people's consciousnesses? Just right now, just as a sort of ongoing experiment with different thought forms in different people's heads. So anyway, that's how far it's gone, and most people don't know that, and maybe they don't even want to know that, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know, I think sadly, Ilana, that is one of the things that we bring up regularly. Whenever we have Dr. John Hall on, whenever we had Robert Duncan.
People don't want to know. You are correct. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that my partners at my former office, when my second book came out, they're like, this is crazy. You're nuts. You know, this just can't be. This can't exist. Yeah. Well, and then once Havana Syndrome came out, then they're like, oh my God, you know, that book you wrote 8 years ago, it all came true. And I said, it was true from the get go.
Yeah.
And I said, now
true.
Now they're just victimizing some federal employees that are getting a little more of the limelight, which, by the way, for some vindication, as I know initially they tried to say that, well, it's, you know, it's not microwave, it's not directed energy, it's pesticides or it's crickets or it's stress. CIA actually presented an article to Congress saying that it was stress and anxiety. But they actually do have a form through the Defense Health Agency called a DHA Form 244, which is the guidelines on how to examine somebody that's actually complaining of an anomalous health incident, which is what they call targeting in the military. So, and it specifically says directed energy, you know, effects and or effects from possible microwave energy in it. Interesting, they're not doing any radio frequency scanning of those people looking for any implants.
Yeah, and you know, I will say the couple of people that you have sent me, the couple of people that have come to me as far as having things scanned, having properties scanned, you know, even when nothing is found, I have found it such an interesting bridge between the family and the experiencer at that point. And in my follow-ups, even talking with families to hear them open up, you know, cause I come in and show them like, no, look, there's not a gas leak in your house. They're like, there, you aren't sitting on top of a uranium deposit somewhere. You don't have any stray electricity. Like, and then we get to the point of scanning for radio frequencies and things like that. But just the fact of somebody has taken their family member so seriously to come out and do this scientifically, changes their mind and changes their perspective on it.
Oh yeah.
And
well, thank God that has changed some. It used to be that I would almost always get a call from a family member saying, if my son or my daughter comes to see you, you send them to a psychiatrist.
The one that you sent me to initially, so long ago, doctor, that's exactly where they had been, was he had been hospitalized. He had come out and, you know, that was the first time that I scanned something and the first time that I saw a family member flip between my visit and follow up.
Yeah.
Where their attitude about it changed. And their attitude toward their family member and toward their experience of the reality that they were having changed. And that meant a lot to me. That catalyzed me in a wholly different way. Much like the first letter I got from somebody, the first email after the first time I had you on, doctor, where...
Well, hey, it changed the name of the show.
Yeah, quite literally. Quite literally, you know, and that's the thing, is being willing to have the conversation with somebody, being willing to understand that these technologies exist. You may think that somebody is absolutely lulu, everybody, but I'll give it to you real quick in another quote from the good Dr. Robert Duncan about what some of these technologies are and exactly who uses them and why.
And this is what the NSA does, the National Security Agency, or no such agency, depending on what you want to believe. But they've been collecting samples of all voices of all humans throughout the world so they can throw those, you know, like a ventriloquist. And that's the danger of government not truly having oversight. We accept that in war. We did it to some during Desert Storm. You know, this is all a throw down your weapons, and they believed it. And you can say, well, it causes less bloodshed. But now, if you really want to manipulate a particular target, innocent, in order to be an information courier or whatever, the CIA does a lot of tricky things, and the disclosure is there from the 1950s and 60s. This is the perfect tool to do that. And innocent people and families, unfortunately, suffer the brunt of something they will never be able to get justice for or even know who is behind it. And that's what saddens me. I at least want them to know. They'll be angry. They'll feel betrayed. all that, but they can get over that with an apology from a future president for what this president's doing, kind of thing. Sure. And that's how they all do it. You know, Obama, I'm sorry we tortured some folks. Well, he didn't stop it. We still are. You know, and president will, you know, say down the line, well, I'm sorry during his administration we were torturing folks, you know. And it's just the game that's played in politics and the news media.
And that is so, so sadly the truth in the case is it all gets to be shuffled underboard, you know, and like we've said so many times, Dr. John Hall, it sounds horrible to say, but much like disclosure with UFO, UAP, anything like that, until we get a stranglehold on funding for such things, until we get a stranglehold on the funding for contractors and stuff like that, how are you going to have disclosure? Until we get a stranglehold on the funding for these kind of programs and the contractors who are doing them and funding them and using the technology for these nefarious purposes. And in what I believe is, as we've said numerous times on this show with Dr. Duncan and you, Dr. Hall, that it's basically just a mass swath of a test, you know? And unfortunately, until we get people interested, there won't be a law passed that prevents the experimentation on the American public. There is no law, people. Other countries have them. We don't. And that's a pretty remarkable thing to think of, that there is zero law that prevents the government from spraying stuff over your skies just to see if it works, or just to see what it does, or for other means and other purposes, when we fully have laws in place to prevent subliminal advertising because we know it works.
And it's still used.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's still fully used. Just you can't do it in a flash frame anymore. You can hide it in background images and all kinds of stuff, man. But you can't just say drink Coke in one flash frame of a movie anymore, you know. It's funny that there are laws against that because, once again, we know it works, you know. There's that peel of the orange that they're fully going to allow you to see and smell and everything else. But, oh, man, the juicy segments of fruit and the seeds underneath and the things and the orchards that can come from that, you know, it's pretty nefarious. And it's pretty mind boggling once you get into it, even in the many years since I've known Dr. Hall and Dr. Duncan. The research I've done and the rabbit holes I've gone down with it is massive. And now meeting you, Alana, and talking mm-hmm. about the whole HARP and 5G connection and things like that. And we've talked with Dr. Hall about the 5G connection and the idea of especially that being able to activate parts of things that we're there to help fight a pandemic, you know? It's fascinating, the idea of if you didn't get them with the news cycle, did you get them with a needle?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then the nanos.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. So it's a trifecta of, either way, we're going to find a way to find the susceptible people and to make sure that, once again, you don't have to put a bunch of voices in their head. I think that's a very old school concept. You can bombard them with enough to literally just fog their mind and their brain and keep mm-hmm. them from reacting as normal, either come election time, what have you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So we have a few minutes left. I would like to thank both of y'all. Number one, Alana, I would like to thank you for reaching out to do this episode. It really means a lot. I'm glad that we got a chance to connect in this way. And I'm glad that we all got a chance to sit back and remember our friend tonight, and remember his work in memoriam, and try to pass that on.
Yeah, it's so important now because we're having this internet type of relationship. It's not a physical relationship anymore, and
that's right.
And people pass and you don't even know for years that they have gone.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so important to remember these people, because that line between this life and the next life is just not that thick, you know? It's a pretty thin line. And I want them to know that we definitely appreciate their work and the risks they took. I mean, you know,
that's right.
Duncan did a lion's share of making me aware of how remote neural monitoring works. And that's super, super important. And thank you so much for doing this show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Doctor, any last bit before we...
One thing, and I certainly wish Robert Duncan to rest in peace. I know the last few months in his life were kind of turmoilish. I mean, with some health issues and targeting. Mm. You know, he was being severely targeted toward the end. I mean, he was a very good friend of mine and co-patriot in the fight against this. And I certainly am going to kind of miss bouncing some things off of him. But I think he made a pretty big difference in my life and kind of the way I look at some things through the physics realm of it. And I think I made some difference with him looking at it from the medical aspect. You know, his father was a physician.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he ever told you that, but jokingly, I don't know if you remember on my Facebook, when I had to go do a lecture at Harvard, I went around in front of all of the buildings holding a sign in front of me that said, "I'm not Robert Duncan." jokingly, so if anybody goes through the pictures on my Facebook page, this would have been 4 or 5 years ago, but you'll come by. I am going to miss him as a friend, as a colleague in the fight against this technology.
Definitely.
Yeah. He once again catalyzed me in this show in a different way. And even whenever, you told me of the news, whenever you first found out Dr. Hall, about his death, I told you 110%. Whatever you need, I'm in full throttle, it's only through these conversations, it's only through talking about this, it's only through bringing it to the light of day that we ever get any answers, and people called MK Ultra whistleblowers crazy for years until the church committee hearings, people called people crazy for years about how we got into Vietnam until we found out how we got there and that it was totally faked, frequently it isn't until years and decades later that we find out that our crazy uncles and crazy friends were not that crazy, because there are patents for it.
Well, and one tidbit I would like to share with any of the targeted individuals that happen to be listening tonight on the show. If you go to his Facebook page, for those who have it, or his Messenger, you are going to see a green light still on it that looks like he's still accessing his Facebook page. You and I talked about that, but even after you're gone, if you haven't left control of your page to somebody else, it will still look like there's somebody getting on it. And another thing, there is somebody sending out messages claiming to be, his death bot or something weird like that. But it's somebody that obviously is trying to mimic him or pretending to be him. So I just wanted to assure that the targeted community that he is sadly gone.
There are no grand conspiracies about his whereabouts or anything like that, folks. Unfortunately, I'm so sad to say. but he was an amazing individual. He has catalyzed so many people to this cause. Alana, before we let you go, please do share with us. Of course, we'll be adding your books to the Curious Realm store on our website, but let everybody know where they can go to pick up your books, where they can go to keep up with everything that is Alana Freeland.
Well, the books, I would like it if people would buy the books at a tiny bookstore in a guy's backyard in Seattle, Washington, the Rudolf Steiner Bookstore. He carries everything I've written, every okay. book I've ever written, including the Sub Rosa America, A Deep State History series, which is fictional at base, but is really about America since John Kennedy's assassination.
Oh, wow.
He's got everything I've written there. So please support him, a little teeny-weeny bookstore. And then I only have two. I have a site called IlanaFreeland.com. That's a historical site. I no longer really keep it up anymore. It was created by a very creative individual. And because she created it, I'm keeping it up to show people her talent and how much work she put into it. And then I have two social media sites, one Facebook site they're still allowing me, called EMF Planetary Engineering. You have to ask permission to join. And then my Patreon site for Alana Freeland. That's it for me.
Okay. Well, thank you so much once again for your time. I would love to have you on again and again. I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation tonight.
Thank you so much. And John, so great to see you again. Sit around with you.
You as well. Glad you could make it on. And rest in peace, Robert Duncan.
That's right. Take care,
rest
Robert.
Rest in peace, yes,
and,
brother.
Until the next great adventure. Thank you so much, guys. I will go ahead and disconnect from y'all now. I'll be sharing links to the show and everything else with y'all via social media. So,
okay.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much, Alana.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Once again, Dr. Duncan, such an amazing researcher, such an amazing individual, catalyzed this show in a totally different way. So thank you for all that you have ever done, Doctor. While you are online checking out everything from Alana Freeland, everybody, as well as all the books from Dr. John Hall and Dr. Robert Duncan on curiousrealm.com/store, make sure to stop on by Curious Research. CuriousResearch.org is where you can get your official copy of the Curious Research Observation and Encounter Log. When we come back from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by Karen Wilkinson live at last month's Symposium of the Strange in San Antonio, talking about her book, Stolen Seed, Evil Harvest, and the idea of alien abduction, alien embryo implantation, and removal, right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
it's been fascinating to me, Karen, since we met, I guess, about a year or so ago, when I had you on my show, to see your story develop, to see you develop even with your story, and the fact that you've even come to a different point of acceptance with things than when I had you on my show the first time.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
And,
yes.
You know, there was something that you brought up that I think bears a lot of importance to pay attention to. And that's the whole concept of CE5. Raise your hands out there if you're familiar with the CE5 protocols. CE5, just so you know, everybody, for many, many years, Dr., I believe it was Hynek, originally came up with the CE scale, the close encounter scale. Basically, you know, close encounters of the third kind means that you've seen a being, things like that. And for those who have had CE3 and 4 experiences where you have been taken aboard craft, where you've actively been abducted, things change in life. And the idea of CE5, I've said regularly on my show, I'm a big believer in physical UFOs. I'm a huge believer that there is a bipedal hominid creature, call it Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever you want, roaming the forests of North America and beyond. But I think that there is also something else that is out there that is fully willing to hijack the tropes of our mind for that consent that you were talking about. Where if you're out in the middle of the woods and you're Sasquatch hunting, well, it knows that you're Sasquatch hunting and that you would be perfectly okay with seeing a Sasquatch. But if you saw me as I really am, it would do a number on you like no other. And it's interesting to me the idea that now we have CE5, where people, CE5 is human initiated contact. That's what CE5 stands for, is close encounter of the fifth kind, where we have initiated the contact. And that's normally a group of people like us sitting around in a state of mass meditation, inviting a craft to appear to us. And that was something that you brought up, that you do not abide by this. You do not believe that this is something that should be practiced. I kind of consider it almost like carrying a Ouija board around. You know, you could, but should you? You know, where do you come in on the CE5 protocols and with how somebody should engage a situation like that, Karen?
Yeah, that's a great question. I personally do not think that CE5 is something that anyone should do or mess around with. And because what you're doing is you're inviting in something. You're literally asking, inviting, and opening up to invite something in, but you don't know what it is that you are inviting. Yeah. And the issue with this, too, is if you get something negative, if you have a negative entity then attached to you, you could be bringing that home to your children, your family members, your loved ones. Anyone who's ever experienced a haunting of any sort, I mean, I remember going back to my grandmother's house after she passed, going up to her room where she would get ready, and there's a makeup table and a bench like about that size. And I looked in the room and the bench moved across the room by itself. I'm like, nope, I'm out of here. That's it. You know, no. You know, you feel that when it's evil, when it's not good, you get that immediate fear for a reason. You know, little children, babies, they show them pictures of rattlesnakes and bunnies, and they see the rattlesnake and they jump back, but they see the bunny and they're like, oh, you know, you're born with an innate sense of danger of what's safe and what's not. And it's important to listen to that, but we can be fooled because that rabbit could be rabid. You don't know, and you don't know what you're going to get. Like I said, the bad guy doesn't come and announce what he's going to do.
And you know, with that in mind, one of the questions from the audience was in relation to specifically the halting of your abductions for a while, regarding faith, things like that, and the fact that things picked back up again, they stopped, and they picked back up again. Do you believe that, A, you can still be abducted anymore, and do you think that people can still be abducted?
Oh, absolutely. I could be abducted tomorrow. Anyone here could be. It doesn't matter what your faith is, what your background is, what your personal choices are. The only thing that matters is that when I realized they had the same creator that I did, and I had to call on my creator to stop it, and that they had to have permission to take me, and I could enforce that, then they were like, oh, no. Okay, it's over.
It just as a religious student and somebody who was a seminarian for the Catholic Church for a while, when you're speaking of that agency specifically, the idea of, I mean, even in the Catholic Church, we still have exorcism, the casting out of spirits, things like that. Do you think that all of these alien species are dark?
No, and that's why I don't recommend CE5 or things like that, because we don't have the ability to discern between them. I had an encounter after my near-death experience in the hospital where I was coming out of that, and I was in the recovery room, and after about 4 hours, they still hadn't gotten me through recovery, which was highly unusual. I was in so much pain. I was just, every time I'd come out of the anesthesia, they'd have to put me back under so I wouldn't have a heart attack or a stroke. And I remember the last time they did is because I woke up and I said, God, please help me. Finally, I had enough strength to just pray. And all of a sudden, there were these two young men, orderlies, at the foot of the bed. They had no tags, no IDs on, just these young orderlies. I remember looking at him going, oh, you look like it could be two of my boys, you know. And they were so sweet. They helped me through. They calmed me down. I don't even remember that they even actually spoke to me, but I was talking to them the whole way up to the room. I get to the room. I grab my husband and my daughter-in-law's hand. I'm like, you have to meet the boys. I would not have made it through without them. And I look up and they're not there. So I looked at the nurse and the other orderly and I asked them, I said, where did the boys go? And she's like, who are you talking about? I said, the boys. I've been talking to them all the way up, the orderlies that were at the foot of the bed. She's like, well, honey, we wondered who you were talking to. There was no one else here this whole time. You know, I think those were the good ones, the good angelic beings. I asked for help and all they did was help. They didn't interfere. They didn't do anything ugly or negative. They did what they were there to do and then they were gone. And so I do believe that there are both.
Well, and I guess one of the reasons I was asking was, once again, because of that agency, like you said, the idea that because these things were created by the same creator, they had no agency over you without your permission. And that's kind of one of the things that we speak about regularly on the show is the idea of consent. You know, and hey, you know, you can consent into having a horrible attitude every day. And guess what? You'll probably have bad days pretty regularly because you've consented into that system of negativity. But this is a system that, like, you never consented into being taken at 5 years old.
No, not at all. But somebody did. And that's why I think things like the Griotta Treaty are important, because that is a blanket consent. Mm-hmm. Because he's speaking for his country. As a president, he can do that. Or he's given someone else the authority to speak for the country. So they're looking for any little crack they can get in to get around and loopholes in any way they can.
I've always found it interesting. Someone who covers a lot of targeted individual things like that on my show. We have laws against subliminal psychology. We have laws against subliminal ads to make sure that they can't put, like, drink Coke on one frame of let's go out to the lobby like they used to do. They do that because they know it works, but it's odd that we don't actively have a law that prevents the experimentation on the American public.
Exactly.
There's zero law to actively protect any of you from the government experimenting on you, and it's pretty fascinating. Yes sir.
Oh, absolutely. All of the above. I could feel them before I saw them. Sometimes I could smell them before I felt them. Some of these grays did not have a good smell about them. Some of them had a smell of almost like a dead animal, sulfur, urine kind of combination. It's hard to describe because, the only other time I've ever smelled anything similar was when we were in Tennessee and we stopped at an RV park and our dog wouldn't get out of the RV and we ended up leaving that RV park anyway, thank goodness. But I got the worst feeling. And then I left there and someone said, oh, you're in Bigfoot territory. And I'm like, oh, you know what? People describe smelling the Bigfoot. And I'm like, that's a really similar to what they smelled like sometimes, but not every time.
And you know, that brings up something, especially with numerous species having visited you, things like that. You brought up something earlier that specifically with reference to the reptilian experience that you had. And I wrote it down here. Let me get to it exactly, because you specifically mentioned them being shining and beautiful.
Yes.
You know, it's fascinating because the stories of reptiles and the connection of reptiles and humanity and the passing of, even whenever you go into the story of the book of the Garden of Eden and the fact of a snake gave us the choice between the tree of life, the tree of knowledge.
Right. You can be like gods. Here, just try this.
With that shining one aspect, do you think that there are good and bad reptilians?
I think that there are good and bad of all of them, because what we're talking about is there are fallen and non-fallen. They're good and bad.
Sure.
And the ones that were taking me clearly were not the good ones, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but then the experiences I have had. So what we're looking at are just variations of the species that God created, and these happen to be the fallen ones. There are so many different kinds, and you know, they kind of blur across. We put them in these little categories, reptilian, insectilian, and Nordic and gray and so, but some of them look more like a cross between some of those, and
sure,
they're all different heights, and some look more feminine, some look more masculine. No two of them ever looked the same. You know, I mean,
yeah.
So we're looking at a vast array of creation that was made for specific purposes.
And you know, that's kind of the example that I've always given is even when it comes to CE5, is I refuse to believe that all species of aliens have our best interest at heart, or that all aliens are evil. I refuse to go to the didactic infrared ultraviolet. I'll stay right here with the white light. Maybe that's why my show color is purple. It's directly in the middle. But the idea that when it comes to our involvement, one of the questions that was asked by an audience member in our online chat was, why the interest in our DNA? If they have technology to travel beyond the stars, to warp time and space.
Yeah.
Why us, Karen? Well, why are we such a linchpin?
That's a great question. You know, we don't know how far they travel, and we don't know where they travel from. I've never been, to my knowledge, to another planet or another solar system or another galaxy. I've been underground. We don't know how far we can be taken in our human bodies. We don't know what their particular bodies are capable of handling in our environment. We don't have a lot of information to work with. We have those of us who have been in their presence who have not been told anything useful by them. So what we have to go on is that they do want our DNA, but why? Well, what I've seen is that they are trying to create a race of hybrids. Why are they doing this? This is not something new, folks. This is something that happened. This is something that started back, you mentioned the garden, when the Nakash showed up and said, do you want to be like the gods, the little g gods, the sons of God, the B'nai HaElohim? These are the angels. The angelic beings also were called B'nai HaElohim. And some of them fell. And those that fell are the ones that I believe are interfering with us now in ways that we don't want. And after that fall, you get to Genesis 3:15, where the pre-incarnate Jesus says in the garden, okay, your seed will be at enmity with the seed of the woman. You will bruise his head and he will crush you will bruise his heel and he will crush your head. This is setting up a seed war. This is the whole biblical narrative right there, folks. This is it. From there, you get Genesis 6, where the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they came and took of them wives of all who they chose. And these became the mighty men of old, the Gibberim, the giants. Y'all hear about the giant bones and all those things that have been found. I mean, I grew up knowing those things were there. I grew up in Ohio around the mounds. We knew that those bones were there. We knew the Smithsonian and the British Museum took them. That's what we're talking about. And then when the flood happened of the time of Noah, because there was so much corruption of the bloodline from that seed war that starts there, and they're corrupting the human bloodline. But why are they doing it? Why do they want our DNA? Why are they corrupting the bloodline? They wanted to stop Jesus from being born. It was just that simple. And they wanted to take back this planet. Who was here before we were? Where did all these giant pyramids and all these things come from? Who built them? We still can't build them today. And we don't know. And everyone's got all these fanciful ideas.
Yeah.
But we weren't the first ones here. And they want it back.
Yeah.
They want their birthright back to this planet. This is conjecture on my part, but it's based on a lot of fact. And not just the Christian Bible, but on almost every civilization across the entire world and every continent has stories about these very same things. They've just got different words for different things and different names for different things. But we're talking about the same thing. Everyone's got a flood story. Everyone's got giant stories. You know, you all know Greek mythology and all that. Same thing.
Yeah.
And so since that point in time, it's been a seed war. And to this day, they still want our DNA. After the flood, something happened. And I write about this. Something changed. And they weren't able to do things the same way that they were before.
And, you know, Lynn Buchanan is one of my favorite guests. He's always on talking about remote viewing. And the one time, even privately, before I asked him on the show the same question, I got done interviewing him at a show, and we were just sitting there. And I was like, man, have you ever remote viewed alien life? You know, like, have you ever just given a shot to go out there and see what's there? And he said that he had actively been in contact with some grays along the way. And granted, he was like, this is just the grays and what I gathered from them in my remote viewing experience. And he went through the idea of DNA and the fact that they, in order to become the hive mind society that they have become, this amazing advanced society with amazing technology, had to sacrifice their individuality. Had to sacrifice that thing that as humanity kind of makes us golden, the idea of being able to have an idea, being able to have an original thought, an invention.
Free will, maybe?
Being able to apply science. So they've got this amazing technology, but they have no new means to apply the technology for their race because they gave up individuality centuries ago, thousands of years ago, so that they could become the hive mind of one thinkers that they are. So they're using our DNA to re-inhabit their people to help build this, and using us and things like the Granada Accord to bring technology to us for us to not only reverse engineer, but to give them new applications of their own technology that can help their species. So it's interesting to see even that crossover with DNA. So any other questions from the audience offhand? Before we go to more of the anonymous questions, let's get into your actual pregnancies real quick. And I know this can be rough. I know it's very personal. You were impregnated a total of 3 times that you know of?
I couldn't even tell you how many, because after the first 3, I just stopped going to the doctor for them until it got to a certain point.
Now, were all these implanted, do you believe, by the same species?
I have no way of knowing that.
Okay.
No way of knowing. They weren't forthcoming with what they were doing.
And have you ever had a chance to visit with any of your starseed?
The 3 hybrid children that I described by my bedside were clearly not human. They were definitely hybrid. So those, and the one that I remember holding when I was taken.
Now, amongst these things, did specifically your starseeds have any messages for you?
These hybrid children had only one message, and that was that they wanted me to come with them, and it was just so evil. I mean, the feeling was so ugly and so evil. It was palpable.
Even though you knew at that point, like inside, that they were of you.
Oh, I wanted them to stay. I asked them to stay. I knew they were mine. I knew that they were half human, but what I saw there had no humanity whatsoever.
Did you feel as though there would be any hope for change for them? I mean, I know that sounds like a very odd and very open-ended question.
No, because that's what I wanted. That's very specifically what I wanted from the get-go, was for them to be with me. I thought before I met them that they were half human, that there was going to be half good to them. Mm-hmm. But having met them, all of those hopes were put aside, and I knew for sure that there was nothing in there. That was nothing in there for me, no.
Now, with that in mind, during any of your other abductions, were you given messages? Were you given messages either regarding humanity or yourself, your life, things like that?
Sure, that's a great question. I mean, there are all kinds of things happened. I was given a lot of knowledge and information, a lot of knowledge that made it very easy for me in school. There was me and one other little boy, I remember, at school, they didn't know what to do with this, so they bussed us off to the high school for math classes. And I remember being I don't even know how old I was. All I remember is the teacher going, "You guys can stand on the chair if you have any questions and raise your hand so maybe I can see you." That's how little we were, you know. And I didn't know where, you know, I mean, I had no way of having all the knowledge they gave me, but it was like a download. I just knew all this stuff. I knew so many things. They would take us, me and other abductees, in these rooms, which I thought were fascinating at the time. Now it's not that big a deal, but the rooms were like all video screen. So it was like immersive and show us things like flooding events and things like that. And, you know, just different things. And it was kind of one of those, like you talk about psychological invasion. It was one of those things where you had to watch something over and over again. And they're saying a message, but I never quite knew what the message was. So clearly, you know, they were trying to get something through to us.
That's fascinating and interesting because, I say that mainly because one of the thought forms I've explored for years is the idea, maybe it's because I'm a child of the 80s, I don't know if anybody remembers like Flight of the Navigator, but when the alien showed up and spoke like TV, remember? They only spoke in TV, they spoke in commercial speak, things like that. Now, if you think about an interstellar group of people traveling amongst the stars to us, before they ever get to us or even know we are there, more than likely they have received our radio signals. And from Lucille Ball to our wars, all the way through, that's the only way they know that we know how to communicate. So the fact that they're basically showing you news clips and a newsreel and that kind of format to try to communicate to you makes a lot of sense to me.
It wasn't so much a news clip as it was just, it was like we were watching.
Well, I mean, news clip fashion.
Yeah, it was like that fashion. Yeah,
yeah,
it was
where just it's like a montage of things being shown.
Exactly. But it seemed to be bombarding.
Yeah.
Bombarding almost.
And even if you think about the possible miscommunication of a species along their way, like imagine seeing all of these things with zero frame of references to who Germany is in the history of Germany, you know, as to who the United States is or the history of the United States. All you're getting is the news and what's being represented of it. It's pretty fascinating to explore that idea. And even the fact that that's kind of happening to us right now in our society. One of the things that I recently did was help archive the International UFO Bureau archive, the archive of Hayden Hughes, who was very, very close to T and Doe, the two people who were the head of Heaven's Gate, the group that committed suicide, mass suicide with the Hale-Bopp comet. And amongst all of that, I think I watched probably 42 hours and captured 42 hours of news footage regarding just that, which is a mass amount of horrible information to take in. However, the one thing from 1997, that story came about 1997, folks, when the internet as we know it right now was really in its infancy, like not really beginning, but as far as a .com protocol, that was just starting. HTML was just beginning. It was just getting off of a database and you could use AOL and just dial www instead of having to know the end phone number of the server that you wanted to connect to. In 1997, Karen, the two things that they kept bringing up, and this was consistently through 40 hours of news coverage, sociologists, everything that they do during all these news coverage events. Like, we have this sociologist on right now talking about the way that people communicate over the internet. Quite literally, the two things that they kept bringing up, lonely people on the internet get sucked into a lot of conversation without a lot of proof. Lonely people on the internet tend to look at a lot of things on the internet and not really put it through the sieve of fact versus fiction. They accept it as fact because it's on the internet. That was 1997. We are still up against that quandary right now. Fact versus fiction. Even right now, whenever I post a YouTube video, it asks me, is anything in this AI created? Is anything of this false information, any of this made up? Like, it specifically asks you now because we are up against that in our society. So, granted, just take that with like a tablespoon of salt, like you should with anything else, folks. But it's something to consider that 30 years down the line, we are in the exact same pot that we were when that happened. You know, like right now, we have people in. I was asked earlier if COVID made a difference in these communities. And I think it truly did, mainly because, you know, it's the fact of people had time to explore communities that they didn't have time for before. You know, people had time to explore experiences that maybe they had never really given credence to in their life because they just didn't have time to think about it. Life was just too busy, you know? And yeah, if it took 2 years of a horrible, horrible situation to open a lot of people's minds and hearts to very deep, deep, important conversation as humanity, I kind of say so be it. But at the same time, it's totally changed the way that our communications happened. Would you have believed pre-COVID that you would be sharing your story, Karen?
Yes, because I was already on that path and I knew I was going to share it. But so I think for me, that is probably not as applicable as for most, because I was already going through this process. I already knew that I was going to share this. I already come to that realization that I had to do something with this. You know, it was a process where I was afraid to share it with anyone, but okay, I'm going to share it with my husband. Okay. I have to learn that it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, because I know this is important. I know this is true. That's right. I know that there's a reason I want to share this, and I have to have my own convictions about it and do it. And honestly, through COVID, I kind of got a little break from it. And I spent a lot of time with my family and my kids, you know, my adult kids. And it was nice, because I was already kind of on the cusp of doing this. And it made me slow down. I got that time I needed. And then I went full force into it. I probably should have been writing and reading and doing all kinds of other things. But no, I hung out with my family and baked way too much bread.
And, you know, to switch things real quick. Let's go back to experiences, and specifically family, and that idea that these things happen within familial bloodlines. That is a lot of the work of people like Dr. Kathleen Martin. She's done quite a bit of work into that, and her recent survey about the spiritual change that happens to the experiencer. Amongst your many experiences of abduction, Karen, do you feel that you were specifically made a vessel for this?
No, definitely not. I was specifically, I know I was beautifully, wonderfully, and specifically made for God's purposes. However, I feel that as far as whoever, even if it was something where parents said, we're going to have children because they want us to, for this purpose, to continue this DNA line, that doesn't matter, because I was still, I'm still not here because of them. I'm here because God wanted me to be here. And that's my belief system. And that's how I feel about it. And so, you know, what happened happened. If I wouldn't change it, because from it, I've been able to help and talk with and work with so many amazing people along the way. So I definitely am not happy about what's happened. And I know this wasn't your question, but it kind of, okay. I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand. But, you know, what I got from it was the ability to really share with people who thought they would never have someone that they could talk to.
Yeah.
They would never have someone who would understand what they went through, would never have someone who knew how to deal with this. So for me, in to that end, at this point in my life, it's really all worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess a follow-up to that, with that in mind, are you open to it happening again?
Absolutely not.
Hold on, because that's a really loaded way to ask that.
It depends.
Of course you don't want the abduction without your consent,
right.
DNA extraction,
yeah.
DNA implantation and later extraction, things like that. But are you open to the contact experience again?
Well, you know, for me, I'm absolutely always open to an angelic, what I consider an angelic contact experience of a good, you know, a non-fallen entity. Yes, absolutely. But I know that I cannot necessarily identify the good from the bad. I know that for a fact, having been in the presence of them both. So yes, 100% to have a good angelic being, you know, around at any point in time, I'll take that any day. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of what we talk about on the show is the experience that people have and how that changes their life, how it changes everything from your religious belief to your literal place in the world around you. And talking with people like Sev Talk, who we just had on the show Tuesday, things like that. The more I talk to people, the more I come to understand that it really is where you are in life, personally and psychologically, as to how you kind of filter your experience. Because yes, you know, like you said, your experiences were horribly, horrendously traumatic for you. But you look at them in a point of growth, Karen, and that's so, so beautiful and amazing from something that's literally so horrendous and horrible.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes you have to find what you can in everything. And I have been, you know, given beauty for ashes in this respect, and I'm grateful for it because, you know, you and I spoke about, I had a near-death experience, and I do write about that as well if you're curious about it. And after that, I, you know, it showed me so much truth about how we go on and what the truth is of who and what we are and our spiritual selves, and that I'm not afraid to die. And so let's just find the good in everything that we have right now and make the most of that, because even though it's bad, there's somewhere you're going to find some good.
How important was that loss of fear for you to sharing your story?
It was very important because, again, it just shows for me, it was a very personal experience, but it was the proof that we go on, the proof that God was with me, the proof that there is a higher power, that we do have a creator, a benevolent creator, and that we do go on. That was what struck me the most in my near-death experience, was that I was still me. That was still my personality, you know. It had nothing to do with who you are and what you look like and where you live or anything like that. You're still you. So get to like yourself, because you're still yourself when we go. I'm just saying.
Now, as we close things up here, there were a couple other questions from the audience. Number one of them was, have you or anybody in your family ever been visited by members of the government because of your experiences?
Yeah, that's definitely something that's happened. I don't have any like fun, crazy Men in Black stories to share with anyone, but there have been some interesting communications, let's put it that way.
Okay.
So, but I really won't say more than that.
All right. Now, as far as yourself, have you ever found any implants or have ever been tested for implants, things like that?
I have a lot of metal in my body now, so it's really hard to see if I have any to be tested for, but I did take one out myself out of my elbow. And it went, it was towards,
you still
it was
have
coming,
that?
I wish I tried to get, it was coming to the surface. And so I won't go through the process of how I got this thing out, but it was over the sink and it literally, I have a really flat kind of sink. It's like a really interesting basin, but it literally rolled down the sink of its own volition. Like it took off.
Wow.
I cannot even describe to you. Wow. I was so freaked out.
I had to ask simply because you had mentioned Dr. Lear and his work earlier. His work was definitely seminal in the world of implantation, removal, testing, things like that, and showing that there are numerous instances. I mean, Terry Lovelace right here in Texas is another fantastic case of implantation.
So many people have had them. I mean, Emil was the 17th patient that he'd removed one from, just as an example of how many were removed. And it's so many people have these. And a lot of people don't have them removed. Some people, because they're in positions where it's difficult to. In the case of Emil, what happens was when they went to take his out, they had done the ultrasound to see it. Mm-hmm. Then they went to get it. And then they put the ultrasound back on and it wasn't there. And they thought they weren't going to be able to get it out. And then they prayed over it and then it showed up again. So they'll mask. And so they go into think they're going to get it. And it's like, oh, well, it's not there. So when they're looking for them, they can mask themselves. So you say, well, have you had it looked for? They can look for it and it won't show up. Mm. They'll, if it knows you're looking for it.
You know, it's interesting. When we spoke recently with Daryl Sims, the alien hunter himself, out of Houston. He was recently at Texas UFOCon and we spoke to him during our coverage. And one of the things that he spoke about at length during his interview was the idea of almost like an app being uploaded into abductees. And this app basically overrides your typical brain programming of see something, say something. And the idea that when an abduction happens, you are now programmed to hide, destroy, and get rid of evidence. As opposed to like, hey, what's this weird mark on my body? Right. You're programmed to ignore the new marks on your body. You're programmed to see something, say nothing. Have you come across that?
Well, yeah. I mean, as a child, I was groomed to not talk about it. You know, be good. Don't say anything. Be good. Don't say anything. This is fine. You're going to be fine. This is the same thing that happens every time. You know what's going to happen. You know where we're here. You know what's going to happen. It's just the repeating over and over and over again. And you, by the time I started to disassociate, it was very easy for them. So yeah, exactly what you're saying is just was programmed into me, you know, and there's, I could imagine, and this is just pure conjecture on my part, but you know, modern day implants could be something more that would be just putting someone into that state that I call UFO brain fog, where you just don't react. You can't react. You can't respond.
Yeah.
And they do, when I was taken, they would be able to look in my eyes and be like, this didn't happen. You're dreaming. You're not here. And I'm disassociated. So they're doing this. And that part of me that's dealing with the tough stuff is doing that. But the rest of me is going, this is so funny because I'm going to remember all of this. And they don't even realize that I'm sitting here in my brain and taking it all in.
That was one of the things that he mentioned as well. This idea of, A, like you mentioned earlier, mind speak, but also the fact that some people, even though the mind speak happens, remember things, even though they're being told to forget. And the way that some people are able to kind of counteract that mind speak, even though it's going on. And
like I said, from the people I've spoken with who have memories like mine, and there are a lot of us out there, it's just most people don't want to come forward and talk about it because we face a lot of ridicule, let me tell you. Then they had the same thing where they just kind of had that split like I did, where we just found a way to disassociate just enough to keep a safe boundary between me and what was happening.
Let's explore that beginning of your statement real quick, which is, you know, the idea of benefit. Where does somebody benefit from this? You know, because that's the thing, is that all those books that are normally behind me may end like a Disney movie, but they also start like a Disney movie, which means the first 5-10 minutes is horrifying for somebody involved. With that in mind, as we wrap things up, how do we, I guess, begin to share this experience with other people? How do we begin to make it okay for people to talk to their families? How do we make it okay for that family member who maybe everybody calls him Crazy Uncle Mike, right, but maybe Uncle Mike needs to talk to somebody, Karen?
Right, right.
You know, how do we approach that?
We just have to keep doing what you're doing. I'll keep doing what I'm doing. I have a girlfriend of mine who has a box of my books, and I swear she probably gives out one or two a week. And that's her goal in life. Not because she's my friend, not because of what it, because she's always been doing this. She's always believed in this. She's always been wanting to share. And now this is a tool that helps her help other people. And she's like a magnet. She finds people who need someone who understands, and then she gives them the book.
Yeah.
And so the only way is to just keep the conversation going. Keep the conversation going. Keep sharing. Keep talking. Talk to anyone who will listen. Make it so that it's – the more we talk about it, the less crazy it is. Well, the more we realize it's just normal people. We're just normal people. Then it becomes more okay to talk about.
Well, and once again, the vested interest, you know, the idea that, you know, when people – question the experience, you know, when you look at things like Travis Walton and stuff like that. He had zero vested interest, zero. He's never really made a whiz-bang amount of money. He didn't make like $1 million off of Fire in the Sky. I don't think he even made like $500,000 or $50,000.
So. No.
As a matter of fact, his best friend of half his life was accused of murder. Lost a national forestry contract. Horrible, horrible things. Even Betty and Barney Hill told their niece, like, this ever happens to you, honey, tell nobody. Tell nobody.
They make it so that there is no upside. And trust me, when I told my story, it was in this movie. The first thing I did was I went out and I bought a wig. Because I'm like, I can't go in public. Yeah. I wasn't supposed to tell anyone, and now I did. And this is just going to go downhill from here. But I couldn't shake that feeling that I had to do this. You don't make money from being in a movie. You don't make money from writing a book. You do it because you want to share some truth.
That's right.
And, you know, there are some books that people can make money from. Yeah,
oh,
but
sure.
This isn't the way
you
do that.
Write a new version of the Bible. That's a big seller every year. We had one question right here.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, what you're talking about are generational curses, and yes, there definitely are such things, or things that follow through generations. And I'm going to defer you back to my friend Vicki Joy Anderson, who I talked to you about, and I have her book up there. Or you can go to VickiJoyAnderson.com for anything like that. She's the expert in this field, and she and I often will do interviews together because our material crosses over and works together so well with my experiences and hers. So, but that is exactly what, yeah. And I have a lot of friends who are Native American and have had to work with her and people like her to stop those generational things that, they're either things that are attachments or curses or agreements or covenants or different things like that. So there are a lot of different directions that it can go.
And yes, sometimes there can even be that generational blessing. The idea that, yes, somebody did something so amazing and connected with the other side so well that it passes on. You know, that the other side stays connected. I mean, that's here in San Antonio, the home of Brujas, right here in Texas. That kind of stuff is passed down through familial generational knowledge, You know, I mean, one of the things we talk about on the show regularly is until modern society, these things were passed down through familial lines. Even trades were passed down through familial lines, and we lose that so rapidly.
Genetic remembrance. There are people who are adopted who have never met their birth parents, but have those traits, even things yeah. they do, even little just weird things that they do that are exactly what they're. We don't understand the human genome at all.
Even
we
deeper,
understand so little.
Even deeper than that, though, Karen, is the cases of people's lives who completely changed after transplant, started having recovered memories of the actual transplanted person. Like had a heart transplanted in them and started having memories from the other person's life, things like that. So there are tons of actual medical cases of this stuff out there, tons of them. Missing fetus syndrome, things like that. There are medical cases out there. So it's fascinating, folks. Remember, as we end our show all the time, it's your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation possible. Without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. Period. So stay open-hearted, stay open-minded, keep thinking openly. Thank you so much for sharing so openly with us tonight, Karen.
Oh, thank you so much for having me with you again. I'm just so happy to be here and to be with everyone here and to share this. Y'all had some great questions, and I look forward to meeting you all later. So thanks again, Chris.
Absolutely. We've got a few more minutes. Feel free to step on back, visit with Karen, have her sign anything, get any books or anything that you want from her. Wednesday, November 20th. Is our next event. We will be here with the Klinga brothers talking about hauntings and paranormal events in Texas. So if you're familiar with Ghost Lab, the Klinga brothers were famously on Ghost Lab, things like that. So they will be joining us in November for this event. So see you guys then. Thank you so much. Tune in every Tuesday night to The Curious Realm. Take care, everybody. Safe travels home.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit aftermath.media today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.